Blog Talk Radio.
Talk about America. There's some challenges our country is facing right now. And all of it's not dealing with COVID. Some of it might be COVID related, but all of it isn't COVID. But I know y'all probably want to hear about the COVID. It is completely and totally surprising to me as a person of 47 years, the way people in America are reacting to COVID. And we've been dealing with it well over a year now. The fact that our country is now splitting down another line of division, and particularly this particular line of division, just shows how far we done went down the stupid hole. We now have a division based on being vaccinated and non-vaccinated. It is starting to happen. Now, I'm a vaccinated person. I received my vaccine back in March. I'm also a COVID survivor. I suffered from COVID back in December. I also have had some of the long-haul symptoms. And to be honest with you, it's been hard. Now, I have friends, and I have family who are unvaccinated. We've had discussion. There's even been some argument about how and why they feel the way they feel when it comes to vaccination. And there's a lot of different answers. Yeah, I got answers about some of the answers range from, well, I don't know how they come up with a vaccine that fast. I got people, friends and family who are against the vaccine for religious reasons. I got people who are just scared of needles and don't take any type of shot whatsoever. Since they've been adults and been able to make the choices for themselves. I got some who just write out conspiracy theories. There isn't, but, and I got some who are just due to medical conditions are just not eligible to get the vaccine. And see, it's those people that I worry about the most, the ones that they will probably want to take the vaccination, but they just not eligible. I've not seen the numbers on how large that population is. But that's more of a reason for some of us to take it than others. And yes, I'm very pro-vaccine. I think all of you should go out there and take it. It's one of the few things that I would be willing to mandate. And I've gotten really harsh reaction when I bring out the word mandate. And I'm going to tell you why I would mandate. And one, it's a national security issue. We're weakening ourselves as a nation by not going out here taking this daggone vaccine. We're putting ourselves at risk to having a collapse of our economy because people are not taking the vaccine. Now, understanding that the vaccine at this particular point in time is been found out not to be able to prevent you from getting COVID. But what it has done is that for those of us who have, for the vast majority of us who've gotten the vaccine, it makes it much more like the common cold than it would be having COVID. And I'm going to tell you, I had alpha variant. It ain't no in hell I would wish that on anybody. So this delta variant is supposed to be more virulent and stronger and more deadly. And those of us who vaccinated, we get delta. It's more like having, you know. Now, I'm also, you know, I've also heard that those of us who haven't had the vaccine, we might be in a better position because we have also, we're fighting with antibodies. But those antibodies are going to wear off after some time. They're going to lose their effectiveness from what I understand. Now I have people who tell me, well, they're telling us that because they want us to be able to, they want to be able to sell more vaccines. Okay, but the only people buying it is the government. And I'm sure the government is giving a good price, but the government ain't going to stop buying in the foreseeable future. I can tell y'all that we are going to be using Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson for booster shots for years going ahead. And that's a whole nother situation, a whole nother question that need to be asked. Because, you know, the conspiracy theories are popping up about there too, and I'm not going to go into that just yet. But it's also going to, this vaccinated, unvaccinated thing is going to start to creep over into the employment market. Whereas whether or not you're going to be able to get a job based on the fact if you're vaccinated or not. Now, I've seen that causing uptick to folks going ahead and getting their vaccine. Because some of y'all like getting y'all money. And you don't want to be put in a position to where you can't work because you're unvaccinated. But there's also starting up a trend where people are now forging vaccination cards. You probably did. Understand this. You can get the vaccine for free. Okay, America? Under the CARES Act, you can get the vaccine for free. The booster is even free. It's going to cost you money to get a fraudulent vaccination card. Just you going to pay money just so you can be stupid. You're going to pay money so you can be stupid. I don't know what a vaccination card goes for, but as it becomes more and more necessary to have one, oh, you best believe, one, the government is going to come up with a way for us to be able to have that information more secure, then so you can't forge it, right? It's probably going to end up on our driver's license page. We're going to get some freaking card. Now, I'm going to tell you now, if you want to, I can hear y'all on it. Yeah, this is where they're going to chip us. We're not even going to go there, okay? Because, like I said, we don't need no chip for tracking. You know what I'm saying? We don't need no chip for tracking. And for all y'all that don't really believe that they don't stick the RF transmitter in the vaccine that's already running around in your bloodstream, then shoot, then that means that that card really ain't going to be worth the poop. Because that means that they actually have to have the technology to be able to scan you. Am I correct? If there's people, for all those who are out there who believe that next, that means the technology already is scanning. Why they don't have this technology out? Why is it not out already? Why am I not walking into government buildings, being able to walk through something, and it tells me that I'm vaccinated or not vaccinated? Because they would already be able to have done that, and we would know about it. It ain't going to be no hiding it. We would already know it. Because then that would be another way for the government to sit there and say, look, we now know, just by being able to scan y'all, that you're not vaccinated. They're not going to hide that. Not this administration. Now, the Trump administration might have done it, but not the Biden. Some future administration might want to hide, but not this. And because there's a possible employment shortage going on, there's other shortages that are going on that are coming. I just read this morning that we're thinning out our nurse pool. We're wearing our nurses and doctors out from you people being stupid out here. You're wearing them out. Whether or not the nurses or the doctors are vaccinated and unvaccinated, and there's a group of them. But we're wearing them out mentally and physically. Right now, if you're a nurse, this is probably one of the most lucrative industries to go into is medicine right now. Because you can't keep anybody. The money is probably mad crazy. But you're wearing them out. And particularly in places where COVID is strong, nurses are leaving, they want to stay, are leaving the area to go to other areas where people got more sick and they can make more money. Why sit in this cesspool with y'all and not go make some money over here? Y'all are going to end up, you unvaccinated people. And I don't know if you know, and it's amazing to me. And I guess just we can kind of tie this in to some of the other stuff I want to talk about. Because, you know, America has a problem that we don't openly admit. And that is that roughly half of our voting population is in alignment with an apocalyptic death cult. There's a faction of the evangelical church, and I'm a Christian. I'm a Christian. I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and he died on the cross for the forgiveness of my sins and all of your sins, and he rose in 3 days. And 40 days after death, on the day of Pentecost, ascended into heaven. I believe all that. And I believe that the Holy Spirit descended upon me. And it sits here as a comfort. I am a Christian. I cuss sometimes. I drink more than I should. But I do believe that Jesus Christ died for the forgiveness of my sins. And all of the rest of your sins if you accept him as your Lord and Savior. But however, there is a faction within inside the evangelical church that wants Jesus to come back. And they, in their misguided thinking, believe that they can trigger this return by making certain things happen. Even though the Bible clearly states that you can't, then try to create all the conditions
that will cause the rise of the Antichrist, the tribulation. I mean, the rapture and the tribulation. They are looking for it. Now, I can get into that whole story, too, if we could. Yeah, we got time. Got time. You know. But this is connected. Because as we look at how our political alignments line up with the anti-vaccine movement, the unmasked movement, and white supremacy, they all have a common apocalyptic death cult at the head of their thinking. And I think the death cult part is more worrisome than the white supremacy part, because all of the death cult people are not white supremacists. Some of y'all belong to it and don't even realize you belong to it and you're black. Got family members. They might not be trying to trigger, but they show them watch. And one of the situations that we're dealing with is that these people have a lot on several branches of government for its representation, industry, and even have large media followers. And so it has been my experience that nothing drives a person harder than their religious belief. You may be able to convince, if you can make a non-religious argument for something, if you can penetrate the shell of their religious argument, you can flip them. However, those are the hardest flips to make. Because you're asking somebody to change their fundamental idea of how the world operates that could jeopardize their afterlife. Now, I know some of you who are listening probably are laughing your butts off, particularly my atheist friends. I know y'all are getting a kick out of this. But even as a Christian, I'm going to tell you now, I would rather be wrong about God existing than to be wrong about him not existing. Because, see, if I was wrong on the side of him not existing and he does exist, and there is a heaven and a hell, I'm going to be relegated to one or the other. And if I've been living a life that has been saying I'm going to do what I want to do because of heaven or hell doesn't exist, then I'm most likely doing a lot of stuff that could probably get me good in hell. And, yeah, so I'm going to ask that question. You know, which one you'd rather be wrong in? So you got more people, particularly religious folk, you're asking them to sometimes take on ideas that might risk their afterlife. That is serious. If you believe there's a life after life here, which the vast majority of us who are deists in any form or fashion, the vast majority of us believe in the afterlife. And it's something that we, the human beings, have had to deal with for thousands and thousands of years. If you look at the Egyptians, how much effort they went into making sure that their souls transitioned from this physical world to the afterworld. You see, these people took that very seriously. And we still do today in the 21st century. Maybe not as seriously as they take it, but people still take it seriously. Some people are so ready for this world to end that they're trying to figure out ways of triggering it. These same people are supportive of the tactics that are used by the government of Israel. And let me make this clear. What I'm about to say is not anti-Semitic. But it is tied in to that same death cult. Now, the Israeli government knows, without a doubt, we have these nuts. They know these nuts have money. These nuts have had, these same nuts have political power. They also have political power in our national government, which have been helping them to be able to force policies that allow us to continue to fund the state of Israel. Now, there's nothing wrong with the state of Israel existing. Let me say that and be unequivocal in that statement. There's nothing wrong with the existence of the state of Israel. It is something that is, that needed to happen, and it needed to happen right before when it did. However, the present government of the state of Israel is no better than some of the entities that attempted to oppress it in the past. The way they treat the Palestinian people, the way they treat Jews of color, is unacceptable. But they are being propped up by this evangelical, apocalyptic death cult that has sway over the United States of America. Do you hear me? And in turn, they have sway over our foreign policy. There are things that they have attempted to do that, like they have building for us with temple. And America, come on, I want y'all to listen to me. Because all of this stuff makes, is why you see the dumb shit happening. And I don't think they're a majority of the population. They have a sizable presence in our population. But their influence is so heavy. And it's heavy because they have done a very good job of driving out people who do not belong to their idea out of church. Many people that I know that consider themselves atheists, just because of the stupid shit they have heard come out of this sector. This sect of the Christian church. It is no way that Jesus could be any kind of which way good. There's no way God could be any kind of which way good if these are the people he supports. Therefore, I have to unequivocally reject that idea. Even though I might want to believe, I have to reject that idea because these are very bad people. And they have made it seem like they are the mainstream. There are progressive Christians out there who do not believe in this message. There are moderate Christians who do not believe this message. Well, I'm going to put it like this. They may believe it, but they ain't trying to trick. Do I believe that the word, do I believe Jesus is coming back? Yeah, I believe he's my Lord and Savior. I do believe he's coming back. I believe in, but I also, I'm not going to get into that right now. That's what that caused me to have gone through a whole theological dissertation. And some of y'all might not even be ready for it. You're not ready. You're not ready for it. Let's just put it like this. Y'all who know me know I read.
and everything hasn't been presented to you. Let's just put it like that.
So, we have COVID, which is unfortunate. And we have a schism in our nation, which is unfortunate, that is being caused, the schism itself, not COVID, the schism. Let me make that clear. Not COVID, the schism is being caused by an apocalyptic death cult. They want people to suffer and die, and they believe that it is God's will, because as soon as God gets fed up with all our shenanigans, he's going to send Jesus back. And then Jesus is going to come back, and they're all going to get a chance to go to heaven. Now, this is the thing for all of my people who belong to the apocalyptic death cult. If you really go back and read the rest of your Bible and see some of the stuff that you're participating in, see, y'all must be martyrs for the cause, because y'all going to hell. If that's what you believe, you're going to say, you know, that's what you believe. You're going to So you really are screwing yourself. Let God do what God going to do and stop trying to help you. Because you're doing nothing but making life worse for the rest of you. Because you're attempting to do something that you can't do, even by theological, doctrinal reasoning, you can't make happen. You're just making life bad for the rest of us. Because if God said, I'm going to come back, when I come back, you think he going to allow y'all to force his hand? Y'all playing the Father, Holy Father like that? Y'all playing it. That's that white supremacist message. Y'all know that God is God. That's what that is. You know that Jesus is a revolution. But we are just spending ourselves, and we're starting to be very inconsiderate of one another. Even like in stores, you can see unmasked people. And y'all, they were bold as ones, like they're trying to get other folks in. Run around and just butt. They'll look at you and got a mask and will walk up in you and try to walk in your 6 feet. Really? Like, you trying to walk up in my 6 feet like this? You trying to intimidate? Wow. That's crazy. It's like you know you're wrong and you're trying to start a fight so that you can hopefully beat that person up so might makes right. But, you know, we ain't trying to fight y'all. We chose to be vaccinated around America because we did have a sense of that we wanted to do to live. And so fooling with y'all dumbasses is like trying to fool with the virus. The physical form, we ain't trying to do all that. So we ain't trying to fight y'all. So when you get to act stupid, we just gonna walk away. And if you get really stupid, you're gonna call the police. And then you're gonna end up on the news, social media, somewhere, your ass is gonna get canceled, you're gonna end up on the Karen board, and then we're gonna find it, then folks in the dark web are gonna find out who you work for. And then that's gonna get posted up. And then your employer is gonna be like, look, I ain't got time to be having no dumbasses being employed by my company while we're trying to continue to make profits, and you're going to hurt my profits because people are going to boycott the company if they find out I employ dumbasses. Now you're unemployed. So stop bucking. This is how this works. If you're not going to take the shot, wear your damn mask. And if you're not going to wear your damn mask, sit at home and order from Amazon. Okay? Go order one. Go order them buckets of, you know, nutritional prep food that's out there, and have that shit shipped to your house, have all your items shipped to your house by Amazon, make Jeff Bezos rich enough so he can build a spaceship for y'all ass, and he can ship you off the planet. Y'all can go Terraform Mars, you can go to Titan, still. Y'all might be able to get enough money to build a warp drive and just leave all together. Y'all can be like the folks in the rapper con. Y'all can go off somewhere else. And we'll find you sometime in the 23rd, 24th century, and we'll deal with you then. After we've been formed the Federation of Planets. Without all of you superior thinking people. And then you can go trigger the apocalypse on some other world. God is omnipotent. He know where y'all at. He'll come find you. He'll come get you. Yeah. He's God of the whole universe. Y'all ain't got to stay on earth with them screwing it up. Y'all can go somewhere else and do that. And y'all can live y'all own little lives. And y'all can have, you know, you can do all that stuff on another planet. And I know when I said that, there's some white supremacists listening to this show because y'all get a kick out of it. But some one of you just said, you know what? You're absolutely right. We can leave all these remotes behind and we can go to another planet. Shit. That STEM stuff might be worse than. She let them teach critical race theory. We can go somewhere else and have our own master race on another world. Have our own paradigm. Children, I'm sending you back to public school so you can learn some STEM. So we can build spaceships with warp drives and we can leave all these pitiful, you know, undermits behind. But that's exactly what y'all need to do. Y'all need to go somewhere by y'all said. You know, you ride around in big pickup trucks, rolling coal, making noise, trying to kill the environment. Now, but then if you kill the environment, how y'all going to do all this hunting and fishing y'all going to do during this prepping time when, you know, you're going to be killing everybody? Again, none of it makes sense. That's what y'all, that's it. That wants to go live off the grid. You let the apocalyptic death cult ruin your whole best life. Your whole best life. Because there ain't going to be no hunting and no fish. Y'all not going to get that in before Jesus gets here. Not in their plan. No. They ruining y'all complete and total best life. I don't get it at all. Don't understand. But I can tell you this. You know, we as Americans can't affect this. Progressive Christians need to stand up. And when progressive Christians stand up, I'm going to need you atheists not to attack them. Because there's a lot of the same stuff that we believe in as far as how the world needs to operate. We're just going to do it from under the umbrella of our faith. And we're going to need you not to fool with us while we do this. Because that's the only counterbalance to this. We kind of understand their language. We kind of understand what they want. So we're better equipped to deal with them. Y'all can never piss them off. So y'all work in concert with us, but don't make fun of us while doing it. Then that make us have to turn around and be a child. And that's the division we don't need. Let us handle it. We'll make a world as gentler and kinder. And y'all can live in and y'all can stop making fun of us. So we're living in the big sky guy. Because we're going to continue to do that regardless of how much you make fun of us. It is going to make us want to fight y'all. And see, then that pushes us closer. And then that fight, you push us closer to the evangelical, which you don't realize. There are large portions of the African-American population who identify with this death cult. Now, if they could eliminate racism, which is the other schism that we have in our country that is getting way out of hand, if they could ever figure out how to erase the racism in there and get the white supremacists, screwed. Because y'all look like nobody really has an understanding of my African-American brother and sister. And even my African brother and sister. Y'all don't get that we are not the same. We are not the same. Our left is in most cases not as far left as your left is. Some of that stuff we ain't hearing. If you attack us, you know, there are groups inside of the left that attack us, African Americans, and attack our sensibility and what we believe in, not understanding that we're most likely, we're more the most conservative group in the Democratic Party and in the left-leaning coalition. We are more, we are closer to the center and more moderate than anyone. Now, there are African-Americans and members of the diaspora who operate inside of orgs that are a really great example of how far left we can go. But even they know there's certain stuff that you cannot talk about if they didn't take it. Nope. Grandma ain't been here. And we are not as quick to dismiss our ancestors as everybody else is. Be careful. We're pushing us off. Because there's a lot of conspiracy theories that you got to understand is going on in the African American community about being vaxxed and unvaxxed are not rooted in the same stuff that the white folks is rooted into. It's rooted into the fact that we don't trust nobody. You know, even though the Tuskegee experiment was about not giving us treatment, folks suspended into the, they gave the syphilis to the to the to the admin, not understanding these folks already had stuff. You know, we got people who believe that the government wants to kill us all. I don't believe that person. If I believe anything, they want to keep us around, maybe in a weakened state, but keep us around, because we're the label. Unless, the only thing I can see that make that untenable is that there's enough immigrants in this country that will work in bad conditions for less pay, that they might see us as replaceable. That is possible. Yes, I'm going there. That's possible. But unlikely. Because one of the things they do like about us, and I'm talking about white supremacists, one of the things they do like about us is that we speak the same language and worship the same Jesus they do. At least that's what they do. That we worship the same Jesus. But at least we speak the English. And as long as the Negro, you know, takes his proper place in society, they have no problem with our existence. Now, the motherfuckers, they don't like it. They don't. And I'm just giving y'all the skin, okay? Because y'all realize that, you know, if you watch my Facebook page, you know I got all kinds of an associate. And, yeah. So this is not my own opinion. About who, like, this is not me saying I don't like somebody, because I love everybody. I might not like you as an individual. And if your group is fooling with my group, yeah, I might side-eye you, but I don't dislike you. Okay? I don't hate anybody. You know, I think that's it. The hate is a very harsh word. And I reserve a very few people. But there's no particular group of people that I absolutely that I would use the word hate. There's groups of people that I'm leery of, that I take extreme caution when I need them. But I know that their proximity is key. I go into a heightened sense of alert and any type of unnecessary shenanigans. But we live in a country in which all of these divisions exist. And we are actually like stoking that fire. We are pushing on a regular, everyday basis of stoking those fires of separation. There are people who are allies who really are stretching their allegiances with other groups. Because, you know, identity politics was supposed to, which is one of the other things that's a danger in America. And it was never meant to be, and I will admit that I'm not against identity politics in its theoretical form, but in its actuality, in its reality of how it is actually practiced on the modern political battlefield. Because I am all for everybody having a seat at the table. I am all for everybody having equal access to eat from that table. I'm all for everyone having a voice at that table. And I'm all for everybody's voices being heard at that table. And I'm all for dialogue taking place at that table between everyone. But what I am against is the jockeying that I see to control the tape, to be at the head of the tape. There are various groups who are fighting to run the table. And in essence of trying, in the effort to gain control over that table, they're attempting to suppress voice or to elevate certain voices over other voices instead of it being equal across the whole table. That creates other division. Infighting starts. We have devised so many different divides based on divinity, on identity, that, you know, and how you see yourself, what you align yourself with is more than just color, gender, sexual orientation. It's more than immutable traits. Because thinking a certain way is almost ingrained in your DNA sometimes. Because the thing is that most people, when they believe in something, they believe in it wholeheartedly. When presented with information that is contrary to what they believe, cognitive dissonance sets in. So you're not convincing nobody. Now, even me talking right now, those of you who are listening are probably pissed off because I've attacked somebody. And there's a few of y'all probably going, amen, brother Scout, speak it. You are on point, Brother Scout. Yes, today, this morning, Brother Scout has chosen violence because the rest of you are choosing violence. I asked a couple of weeks ago, what would you rather for me to do? Get everybody to tape and sue Kumbaya, or would you want me to choose violence? The vote was overwhelmingly Scout, choose violence. And this morning, I'm choosing violence. And when I say that, I'm not talking about physical violence. Because, see, we all think of violence as being something that's physical. But there's ways of attacking people that you can never lay a hand on. It's how you say things. It's how you interact. When you are purposely trying to get a rise out of somebody, when you're purposely trying to get somebody angry, when you purposely attack somebody's belief, when you purposely attempt to dehumanize or belittle another human being to make a point, you've chosen violence. You've chosen violence. Y'all like it. Cancel culture is violent because you're attempting to forcibly separate somebody from the great society because they don't believe what you believe. Some people need to be separated, but there's this thing called due process, and nobody seems to want to deal with due process. There's so much to be said about that particular part of identity politics because identity politics is directly correlated to the cancel culture. because if you don't agree with what's going on, if you decide to be a dissident, if you decide that you're going to go against the grain, then you're canceled. The news is that everything that goes around is coming around. So be careful if y'all are that canceling, because it can be very well much. It can be very well in the next 10, 20 years that the position you hold is no longer popular, and people are going to come for you for things that you did and said today, because it's okay to do and say. That you might lose, you might lose everything you've worked for.
So America, come on now.
And all of this is precipitated into us separating into camps. And those camps find allies. And I'm tying it back in. And because of that, some of us have chosen to get vaccines and wear masks. And the other people have chosen not to get vaccines and not to wear masks. Because we've decided to separate ourselves and attempt everything we do. There's a bad. On the merit badge stage of your particular faction. If you're a good progressive, you have an intersectionality merit badge, you have a mask merit badge, you have a vaccination merit badge, you have a Kumbaya fire campfire badge, you have a LGBT ally or LGBT merit badge, and you have a climate change merit badge, a voting rights merit badge, you have a women's rights merit badge, you have a Black Lives Matter merit badge, you know, you have a coffee shop merit badge. Let's do this. Now, if you're on the other side, then you got a hunting merit badge, a gun nut merit badge, you got a Chick-fil-A merit badge, you got a full life merit badge, you got God and Country merit badge, you got I Back the Blue merit badge, all this other stuff. So you see how that works. Everybody wears their little badge. They got the I won't wear a mask merit badge. I'm not gonna let you give me a vaccine merit badge. So you see how this works. So we, you know, if you fall in a separate, different, certain little camp, there's certain things you can support because in the overall scheme of things, you still fall into two camps. And, but the thing about on the left is because we have identity politics and we are separating ourselves out and putting ourselves in danger of diminishing and diluting our numbers because we are continuing to subdivide. And let me make this clear as I get ready to go into the next one, tell the American, the American idea of COVID, because COVID, to me, COVID-19 is the catalyst that shines, that causes the light, the catalyst that gives power to the light that is shedding on our problems in this country. Every problem we have in this country, inside of America, domestically, every problem we have is being stressed and tested to its limits by COVID. COVID is testing racism, our economic systems, our political systems, our social systems. It is testing everything. And nothing seems like it's holding up well, too. That's why I spent so much time in this. And I want you to go back, if you get a chance, to listen to this show. I want you to pay attention to all of the different things I just threw into that gumbo. Take and chop it up. Separate it out. Take each of the ingredients and go behind it and watch and see, look and research how each one of those things and what I just said has very much the possibility of being in the realm of fact instead of just my opinion and conjecture. Go back and look at it and look how the dots are connected. Because that is a serious mess there. Very serious. It endangers our whole way of life as a species on the planet. Now I want to switch over and talk about something that America really has pissed me off with in the last week or so. And I love my country. Yes, I do. But y'all be pissing me off. We family be pissed off. Afghanistan. The events in Afghanistan have proven to me once again that regardless if you're right wing or left wing in America, no one pays attention in history class. And after you get out of school, whatever history you may have learned, one, you lose 50% of that knowledge the moment you walk out of school and no longer have to memorize it for any test or exam. But then you don't keep up with the changes of new knowledge, nor continue to keep that thing sharp after you get out of school. Now, as a couple of us, we actually enjoy history. We enjoy it to the point that we continue studying it after we got out of school and got deeper senses of what it is. And this is the thing. You don't have to be a paid academic to research. Some of us just do it for fun. And we still follow academic resources, you know, academic sources. You know, because usually what will start me out is somebody will write a paper. And then I start looking at all their source documents that I can get my hands on, reading the books that they read, looking at stuff that they looked at, you know, going trying to find everything I can find on the subject to get a deeper deep, and then start doing stuff on my own. Because one of the things that usually most researchers have some type of preconceived premise that they're looking for from the jump street. And I just want to know the truth. What happened. But it seems that when it comes to the Afghan issue, Americans fall into two categories, mainstream. They didn't know who or what Afghanistan was until 9/11. So everything about Afghanistan is the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. That's all they know. The other major group that deals with Afghanistan remembers Afghanistan back to 1979 when the Soviets invaded Afghanistan. And they kind of get the whole evolution of the Mujahideen into the evolution of the two branches, which become the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. But past that, most Americans have no idea of Afghanistan and the history of Afghanistan. Now, one, for the most part, the Afghans have never been completely conquered. Now, there have been empires that seen their borders include Afghanistan. but nobody has really ever controlled that area other than the Afghans or the people that they're descended from. And for the most part, a lot of, you know, and I studied a little bit extra over the past week because I know I wanted to talk about it. In actuality, a lot of the empires that formed in the area, I would want to say about half of them, the founder of that dynasty was actually an Afghan or somebody who was from there. Now, you go back with the earliest indications in Western history that we have of these people. It's known as a region of the state known as Bactria. And Bactria is where Roxana is from. You know, who was that? Well, that was the wife of Alexander the Great. And Alexander the Great is the first Western power that we know that comes in contact with these people. And he couldn't subdue them militarily. The only reason he was able to get any type of control over that area is because he married the rulers of that area's daughter. And it was kind of a union that way. And Bactria ends up becoming a part of what we now know as Parthia, which is basically a successor state to the Persian Empire. But the Parthians, leading up to the rise of Islam, were very Hellenized. It was considered a Greco Persian, Parthian, Bactrian mixture going over there, because this is where you get one of, you know, after the death of Alexander, you get all of the different, the four generals separate. You get Seleucid Empire, you get the Ptolemies in Egypt, you get, you know, what's left of Macedonia and the Greeks. And then you get something going on in Asia Minor around the Alatonian Peninsula, which is now modern-day Turkey. And over time, that fluctuates. The Seleucids, you know, end up coming all the way almost into what is modern-day Turkey. You got the Ptolemies, you know, ruling Egypt until the rise of Rome. And then you get Rome pushing over, and they eventually conquer Greece and start pushing, going to war with and they conquer the Ptolemies in Egypt, and Egypt becomes a province of Rome, and they start pushing against the Seleucids. The Romans even made it as far east in some of their attempts to fight. They made it to Afghanistan, did not know it. And got their asses handed to them. And this is why that empire then falls to the Romans. The Romans, it was the Bactrian. It was the Bactrian war that backed up the Parthians that ran that were major parts of the Seleucid Empire. And you get this going on back and forth, all the different, even after the rise of Islam and the conversion of these particular groups, particularly the Pashtuns, and whatnot, falling into this whole Islamic rise. Even then, a lot of those empires that attempted to put control over the Afghans couldn't do it. And they would form one empire after another that would come out over a certain time and take over a caliphate, you know. So the Indians had an issue with it, but at one point in time, that one of the Afghan proto-states actually governed over large portions of India. But no one has ever been able to subdue them in the entire, you know, the British tribe. So you got Alexander the Great, you got the Romans, you got the Islamic Caliphates, and then you got the Mongols. Genghis Khan tried these cats. Really never was able to get control of them. Actually, he made deals with them for warriors and whatnot, because he could never get the Mongol Empire was never able, neither Genghis nor Kublai Khan was ever able to get control of them. So then you come down the Chinese tribe. That didn't even work. The Chinese, because you know the Mongols eventually became one of the major dynasties in China. That never happened. Then you get the British tribe. And this is when most modern folks who do have some type of extra understanding of Afghanistan get into, the British went in there. Because the only reason the British went in there is because for some reason they thought the Russians were going to go in there. If everybody had just left it alone, there wouldn't have been no problem. But the Kingdom of Afghanistan, everybody was worried about them siding with the Russians. Which the British, was always worried about somebody getting a leg up on them, which they started unnecessary wars. One day I'm going to talk about the blundering of British foreign policy throughout the world, and just caused all kinds of just the Brits are foreign policy fuckers, bad. Even though they control large portions of the world, these wars started unnecessary. They could have got control of these places a lot easier. They have a lot, hell of a lot less bullshit, and not but they just whip it shut. So they go in Afghanistan to counter the Russians. The Russians ain't even really trying to go in because they know about it. At least back then they knew about it. And then the British get in there and say, oh, okay, we didn't get much resistance. That's how the Afghans do. They ain't finna fight you up front, because they don't, their tactics do not lead to that type of fight. So they bleed back into the mountains. You think, oh, we done won. They look keen, go, okay, you run things. You bring in your, you start building stuff, and they be like, oh, that's like, they stay. Okay. They come out the mountains, they kill your men, women, and your children. And you eventually, after years of struggle, heartache, and pain, you get the hell out. And it always comes down to every, because of where they sit at. And it was something that I learned during my research over the past week, is that the city of Kabul itself has rarely ever been under anybody else's control but the Afghans. Because it was always kind of left to be an independent city-state, even while other nations were trying to rule over Afghanistan, because it was like, because of the Khyber Pass that it sits in, that is one of the main routes of the Silk Road, and everybody understood the economic importance of that city not being fooled with for trade purposes and movement of goods and stuff back and forth, that they usually just left it alone. And we think about how this situation has degenerated. You can see that nobody really went in there and paid history any attention. Now, I agree with us leaving Afghanistan. I think we should have left a long time ago. And if we were going to stay, I do believe there would have been a way to stay in Afghanistan without upsetting the Afghani population. But we weren't trying it. But under the circumstances in which we were there, we should have left a long time ago. After we killed Osama bin Laden, we should start moving out then, because our mission was complete. And we know that there were thousands, maybe even tens of thousands, of Afghan citizens that helped us out. We should have kept those folks close and inside so we can start processing them early. They should have been living on base with them. Their families should have been integrated into whatever we were doing. We should have been Americanizing them then, or Westernizing them then, assimilating them then, because we knew that they couldn't stay behind. And we would have been there long enough that we could have had these people completely and totally prepared to integrate into American society. We knew we couldn't stay forever. We knew we wasn't going to stay forever. And if we were going to stay forever, we weren't going to be doing what we was doing. Now, I want to talk about that briefly. And it probably won't be. But I want to talk about that for a second. Because there's reasons we could have stayed and should have stayed, but under a different structure. Is that we have two nations that are in that area that we have hostile relations with. One is Iran. The other one is China. It would have been very nice to have a lot of American firepower on either one of their borders that we could have struck into their heartland easier, other than coming in from the areas in which we would have normally come. And how would we have done that, you say? Well, one, you stop ceasing to be an occupying force. You stop patrolling their streets. You get a status of force agreement just like we do with everybody else. We make a defense pact with them saying, hey, we will help defend you in these circumstances. We negotiate with the Taliban and say, hey, and while we were negotiating with the Taliban and didn't have the Afghan government at the table, that shows you right there we knew that they was going to hold up. But that's another story. Because right now we're talking about the reasons why we could have stayed and how that would have looked. That would have allowed us to form more permanent bases, being able to feed into their economy and bring those Afghans that work with us into our fold and let them say they family. We start Americanizing. We even started, you know, after a while, letting them be able to take trips back and forth to the United States. Letting their officers come to school here and bring their families with them so they get a little taste of America and go back. You know, we might have been able to even, from a nation-building standpoint, be able to come up with some, you know, be able to groom some leaders that would have been able to take over, that was Afghani, that understood Afghan tradition and policies and this, that, and other, that would have been acceptable by the Afghan people, that could have formed the core of a very special and very strong Afghan military force. But we were just spending money. Understand that we were just spending money. That was a way for defense contractors to make money. You know, for some of our retired military people to go play in the sandbox and still be willing. And it's sad. And I've watched a lot of my friends who are veterans who served in Afghanistan. Really feel some type of way, because a lot of the guys that went over believed in the work we were doing more so than they believed in Iraq. Because, see, this is where the terror attack is planned. This is the headquarters. This is a sticking getting back to 9/11. we didn't necessarily lose to Afghanistan. We won the war. The war has been over for some time. We lost the occupation. And at some point in time, that is the way it always goes. Because you can't occupy a nation forever unless you plan on conquering. Because even the American military has been in Germany and Japan since the end of World War II. There's been a consistent American presence in those countries since the end of World War II. The occupation of Germany and Japan ended in the 1950s when those countries had new constitutions and became sovereign nations. And we formed alliances with them and their new government. We had status of forces agreement that allowed us to continue to keep military bases in the country to face new foes. That should have been Afghanistan. That's how that should have happened. But again, we don't pay attention to history. We like sensationalist news stories. And we finally just end up screwing ourselves. And now we have all this bad PR come across our screens. Afghan citizens are trying to leave, and we ended up finding out that we done spent billions upon billions of dollars training an Afghan army, 300,000 people that just got steamrolled by military force. That didn't have a lot of heavy weapons. And y'all, and this goes back to some questions that I always get asked when I'm talking about Second Amendment rights here in America, and you know why we do it. And I, my left wing friends go, "You can't beat the American military, not without airplanes and tanks and stuff."
I always say, look at Afghanistan, look at Vietnam.
Because what happened is that somebody is going to give us a new start spot. We'll get hold of some tanks. We'll get hold of some ammo. We'll finish the job. Yeah. Yeah, y'all see what I'm talking about? See how that happened?
Yeah, the American military fight us back. I was just saying they'll fight us back. You had it. I think half of them would join. You had to worry more about the police force than you would the military. But, I mean, Afghanistan didn't have to happen. And I understand that, you know, Biden was just, that was already an agreement. We had no choice to really go, but go ahead with said agreement. And it is what it is. But I do think that the intelligence assessment is completely and totally sucked and based on white supremacy. And this is why every time we have these intelligence assessments, this is why I need African Americans, Latins, and other minority groups in this country to really start working on foreign policy education. Start working on education paths that get you into intelligence, because American intelligence suffers, and it's going to be a whole, it's probably a whole other show, but American intelligence suffers because of the lack of diversity in the thought processes of American intelligence. The only reason we was able to catch Osama bin Laden is because a woman was looking at things that men weren't looking at. It was diversity that got us there. But see, when you got a bunch of white men who are looking at the world through white eyes, looking at brown people, trying to discern what they're going to do,
more than likely, they're going to be wrong. This goes back to the case of British foreign policy. This is why they were wrong so many times in the decisions they made, because there was no diversity of thought in the process. Because I'm sure we've been bringing along, we had raised up some Afghanis and allowed them to not be completely assimilated into the American culture. Is that what happens to a lot of folks when we do bring them in? They start joining that culture of white supremacy adjacency that you don't think from your brown mind anymore. Because, see, if you're thinking from a brown mind, you understand how you can defeat white supremacy. You think about it. Because you're living and surviving every day. Nothing is done on the same scale. It's not the same process. But if we had more diversity in our intelligence gathering and intelligence, and I tell you that the analytic part of our intelligence process, I promise you we'll get different assessments. And then we have different outcomes. And we've been stronger America, because America has become stronger than it's become because of our diversity, not because of our homogeneity. Oh God, this is one of those problems I've suffered because I have a hard time getting words out of my mouth. The American hegemony that is based on our Anglo-Saxon Protestant whiteness. We've developed like this because we have integrated bits and pieces from everybody. American, you know, that's a whole other story now. It's a whole other story. And I might do some bits and pieces and do some follow-up on RTL as we come in. But let me switch gears just here for a moment, because I want to talk about local politics. This won't be the American come on, that won't be if we went to local politics. We're in the municipal election here in Georgia this year, and qualifying was last week. And it was interesting because, from a personal note, over the last couple of weeks, I've been receiving more text messages from different Democratic recruiting organizations trying to get me to run for office in my home county. A couple of folks sent text messages about running for mayor of LaGrange. I found that to be very, very funny. Because one, I like the mayor of LaGrange. I think Jim Thorne's a pretty good mayor. Even for one who leans Republican, he does some very progressive things in the city. The city's growing and it's healthy, you know. There's some issues that need to be tackled when it still comes to income inequality, but he's opening to listen. It just people need to be, find out how to properly talk to him. And, you know, LaGrange, when I get stuff settled out, I'm going to come help y'all figure this out. But that didn't need to happen with me running for mayor. And then I started receiving text messages. I guess because I was so unequivocal about not running for mayor, I started receiving text messages about running for city council. I don't know what qualification looks like, what looks like in city council this year, but I live in District 1. That's a seat we need. I'm not prepared. I wasn't prepared to run for city council this year. I wasn't prepared to run in truth under no circumstances this year because I'm a political consultant and I'm running races. I'm actually running an Atlanta City Council race right now. That's what I'm managing a race. I'm working for a wonderful candidate. Time for me to plug my candidate. I'm working for a wonderful candidate in District 5 by the name of Doug Williams. And I want y'all people to look Doug up, because Doug is the truth. And I'm not just saying this because he's my cousin. And all y'all who know how I usually operate, y'all know that for the most part, I don't work for nothing but the realest really. The ones who be honest with you. To be honest with you, if Georgia would elect the people that I normally endorse, we would be a hell of a lot better off. We'd be a hell of a lot better off. A hell of a lot better off. I think I said that. Yeah. Than we are now. Not saying that we don't have good people, but everybody that I have ever helped get elected is the shit. They were really good. They are really good people, and have a true love for their constituents. From former minority leader Bob Trammell to Representative Doreen Carter, Judge Angela Brown, you look at some of the folks that I didn't help get elected. You know, I worked on the background for Park Cannon, great individual, Representative Park Cannon. I mean, there's a lot of different people that I worked on the background and support or even endorsed. You can just look at my endorsement list. They're usually good people. So going back on saying that, you have that I normally don't deal with people who are not going to do their job. I'm not going to deal with it. But Doug is special. Doug is super special. Because his receipts and his bona fides are the most impressive bona fides I've seen for somebody running for office for the first time in my life. I've never seen anybody. Somebody who got so much done for their community before he was considering running. Indeed, even while running for office, he organized and helped solve the problem because he understands that he's a hospital and he's punching, working on his dick, moving the ball down the field to games to solve the issues of that district. And the reason I'm talking about this is because we have so many people that are running for office who are making these promises. And they don't even have a clue on how they're going to get stuff done. They don't even have any clue on how they're going to get stuff done. I just heard that my reception has been bad. So it was better than that, but I just found that I had something switched off. See, I'm dealing with new tech people. I'm trying to get some of this stuff figured out. So that was my mama that sent me that message. So, mama, I just flipped the switch. Is it any better now? Just send me a message and let me know. It's not that special. Man. Is that any better? So, going back to what I was talking about, and I hope y'all been able to hear some of what I was. That just hurt my heart. This is that I don't gave all this good information out and y'all might not be able to hear. Ooh, Lord, technology. I need some help with this. We have to be mindful of the people that we are electing that are giving us promissory notes. about what they're going to do and looking at what people have done. Because usually if somebody's getting ready to run for office, there's something that they have done. And if they are green, I've learned some things. There's some things you can be doing while you're in office, while you're running for office, that kind of give people an understanding that you can get the job done. And we need more people like Doug Williams to run for office because he works. And as we're looking at county, you know, and I'm looking at how Canada recruitment goes in this state. And to be honest, it's not going very well. We get people to run for seats, and the criteria in which we are looking to be able to put people into office is a skewed metric because we're looking at people who we think can raise money, which I'm a political consultant, so raising money is a good thing because I can't get paid when I'm working for race because folks are not raising money. But we're not looking at these people holistically. We're not looking at them from the standpoint of, okay, what have they done? Is this something measurable? The electorate can understand? Are we going to continue to use hyped up political speech to anchor, you know, to reinforce these people's weak position and create stories that make them more palatable to people? Are these people even personable to people? Because I'm going to tell you something. We should not be electing people in a republic that can't get along with others. If you can't play well with others, you don't need to be an elected system. That should be a key component. Can this person play well with others? Because the vast majority of our elected positions are legislators, meaning that at some point in time, if you have an idea you need to get other people on board with you to pass meaningful legislation. And I think that some people will find their agenda to get a lot further if they were just more personable. Now, I don't need you to be a party animal, but I need to know you have good negotiation skills, know how to build good relationships, know how to communicate properly, and then know how to delegate. And at some point in time, you might be a leader, and you can't carry all the water yourself. And you need to separate that water from the budget and be confident in the people that you're giving this budget to be able to carry. And a lot of times, that's our biggest problem, is that we don't know how to do that. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit more as I get into my RPA. But we have a lot of work to do. And it's being hard because not only are we having problems really recruiting good candidates to rep office. And that's one of the reasons I won't run, is because of the way things are set up. I'm coming into the position as on an A ball. I feel like I've done enough. I feel like I have enough coming. I feel like I have enough experience to come in a really low level seat, an entry level seat to get some stuff done. However, when we look at the ability to be able to raise money, I'm not sure that I can. And you can hire great fundraisers and people who can give you lists and sit down and call time manage you, but if you don't have the connection or the confidence in your connections to be able to raise that money, then you might not want to run for office. And to tell y'all the truth, I'm like, a lot of y'all gas me up about running, but I don't see y'all coming out y'all pocket. a lot of things that I do now that God gave me about COVID.
Y'all ain't planting no seed over here to put. And that's the other thing. We got people we need to plant seed into. If we want people to run for office, it got to be a long-term strategy. We got to pick these people out and get them ready. And everybody who already has all this, you know, some of these people just lack. There are people who lack, who have the personal skills, they have everything else. They have lack something else. We just look at that in there. We look at so many times that we got people that we see that are already, they know we got to just pour a little water on it. It's like instant politicians. And they also need some women. We got all these people we run through these different leadership groups. And I'm looking at the people we put into those groups. And those people come out of those groups and still are coming out lackluster. Hell, I need to probably apply for one and go through and see what I can do. Because I'm looking at what y'all putting out of these different, you know, county leader groups, you know, leadership this and leadership that and leadership this. And none of those people are coming out here winning seats. None of those people are really out coming out making any impact. They're doing really great in the business world, but they ain't doing shit when it comes to politics. What we teaching? But I get into that when we get into an RTA. Lastly, and I might have to save this for an RTM because my reception is not coming across good. I don't want to waste this piece of information and not be able to properly prepare. But I want y'all to have a great Sunday afternoon. Think about how we keep separating ourselves. Think about how we keep choosing violence over peace. Think about, really do a 5-why analysis on why you think the way you think. Ask yourself, why do I think this? And why do you think that? Do a 5-why analysis. Get to the root cause of your thinking. See where that takes you. So I think at this point, I'm going to go ahead and see y'all in y'all Sunday afternoon. This is Down South and Dirty. And I'm out. Peace.